Welcome to the Deep Dive. We tackle complex documents, so you don't have to. Today, it's the sectional titles Schemes Management Act of 2011. This is basically the rule book for shared property in South Africa.
Yeah, it really is. And it's not just, you know, a list of rules. It actually sets up the whole legal structure. Our goal today is to unpack how this law creates the body corporate and how it enforces, well, pretty strict financial and ethical standards.
Right. And this body corporate, it just appears, doesn't it? It's not like forming a company. It seems automatic.
It is, exactly. Section 2, subsection 1 is clear. The body corporate comes into being the moment someone else, other than the developer, takes ownership of a unit.
Wow. Okay, so that first sale flips the switch.
Instantly. The machine starts, and all the owners are automatically members.
Okay, let's dig into the money side then. The core functions. The Act seems really big on separating funds. There's the everyday pot, but how does it stop schemes from falling apart financially, say 10 years down the road when something major breaks?
Ah, well, that's where the two mandatory funds come in. Section 3 lays this out. First, you've got the administrative fund.
Right, that's for the regular stuff, like maintenance, rates, insurance.
Exactly, the estimated annual operating costs. But the real safety net, the one designed for those bigger future hits, is the reserve fund.
The reserve fund. Okay, so what does that shield owners from, really?
It shields you, the owner, from getting hit with massive, sudden special levies when, say, the roof needs replacing or the building needs repainting. It's specifically for future maintenance and repair of the common property.
And someone decides how much goes in.
Yes, the minister actually prescribes minimum amounts, guidelines to make sure it's adequate. And owners have to contribute to both funds.
How's that worked out?
It's usually based on their participation quota.
Participation quota. Okay, sounds a bit technical. For someone listening, what does that basically mean?
It's generally your slice of the pie, you know, usually linked to the floor area of your section compared to the total. And remember, the body corporate itself is a legal entity. It lasts forever, it can sue people, and it can be sued. So managing these funds properly is critical.
Okay, huge responsibility then. If there's potentially millions in these funds, who's keeping watch? It can't just be volunteers, surely. The law must demand some serious ethical standards.
Oh, absolutely. Section 8 is key here. The trustees have what's called a fiduciary relationship with the body corporate.
Fiduciary. That's a strong legal term, isn't it?
It is. It means they have to act honestly, in good faith, and crucially, always in the best interest of the body corporate. No conflicts of interest, putting the scheme's needs first.
Okay, but what happens if they don't? What if the body corporate, maybe led by trustees who aren't doing their job, just refuses to fix a leaking roof or enforce a rule? Is an owner just stuck?
No, not powerless. Section 9 gives owners a route. First step, you serve a formal written notice demanding they take action within a month.
And if they still do nothing?
Then you, the owner, can apply to the High Court to appoint what's called a curator ad litem.
A curator ad litem.
Yeah, essentially a court-appointed administrator who steps in to pursue the legal action on behalf of the body corporate. So there is recourse. Now, beyond the money and the trustees, you've got the rules that govern daily life. Section 10 covers this. There are management rules.
For how the scheme is run, administered.
Correct. And then conduct rules, which are more about resident behavior like noise or pets.
And changing those management rules, I saw it requires a unanimous resolution. That's
right.
Well, that's incredibly difficult in practice, isn't it? Getting every single owner in a large building to agree.
Extremely difficult.
Yeah.
It speaks volumes about the Act's focus on stability for the core administrative structure. You can't just easily change how the whole thing operates fundamentally.
Makes sense.
And any change to either set of rules, management, or conduct needs the chief ombuds stamp of approval before it takes effect. Plus, let's not forget, owners have duties too under Section 13.
Right, like allowing access for essential repairs with notice, usually.
Usually, yes, unless it's an emergency.
Yeah.
And you have to maintain your own section properly, avoid causing a nuisance, stick to the intended use, basic neighborly stuff, codified.
So looking back at our dive, it reveals this really tightly structured legal world. Mandatory savings for the future, strict ethical duties for leaders, even an advisory council mentioned in Section 18 to keep the Act up to date.
Absolutely. And if you connect the dots, that mandatory reserve fund and the strong fiduciary duty, it really points to the law's core aim, ensuring these shared living setups are financially sound and ethically run for the long haul.
And the teeth behind it all. Section 20 is quite something. It says a developer or even an owner who doesn't follow certain key rules right at the start, like disclosing finances properly at the first meeting or handling money correctly, well, they commit a criminal offense.
That's right.
And could face up to 2 years in prison. That's not just a slap on the wrist. It really underscores the immense legal weight placed on people running these schemes. It's not just encouraged responsibility. It's legally mandated with serious consequences. Makes you think about the level of diligence required.